security, as far as the work that the public safety organization section of the organization handles, the information that is provided on subjects related to human trafficking. It also provides training and promotes the policies of the states with regard to human trafficking. As far as the context that we're going to talk about today, we note that on speaking about human trafficking, this is a crime that is not reported to the extent that it should be. The figures that we obtain are variable, highly variable, depending on the institution that reports them, but nevertheless, there's a very high number of women, above all women, children, female children, and adolescents who are trafficked constantly. This is a process. It's not as if the person who is a victim from the beginning or a person who is being traded, so to speak, it may begin for irregular migration, illegal migration, or trafficking people, and later they become a victim of the slave trade of sexual exploitation. And it's a very serious problem and affects the human rights of people. And the patterns of mobility are not constant. They change. They're not permanent. They're always changing. Just to give us an idea of the international panorama, there of people who migrate seeking better living conditions do so from countries that are less developed to countries that are more economically developed. But nevertheless, we note that the type of exploitation, such as sexual tourism, the perpetrators seek and travel to countries that are financially less developed to exploit minors in particular. In the Americas, we note that human trafficking and migratory flows don't only go from the South and Central America to the North, but also migratory flows go from South America and Central America to other continents like Europe and Asia. Later, we will note the effect of public policies, though they're well-intentioned, they sometimes contribute to human trafficking. We need to note that the flow of Asian migrations to the continent has increased here in the Americas. As one of the senators of a country in the region of Mercosur mentioned to us, that approximately 2 clandestine planes land in her region and her province weekly, with a large number of Asian migrants who, most of them, end up being exploited in the labor force and also sexually speaking. In Central America, we note that there is a human slave trade. In all the Americas, there are core countries of origin and destination. Originally, it was thought that Central America was only a transit point, but there are also countries with all of these categories. There are countries of origin, passing, and also of destination. The countries in the Central American region, countries from the Andean region, may have good intentions, but they have increased the requirements for visas for tourists, as well as people who wish to do business in the region in these countries. Therefore, traffickers and human slave trade perpetrators in these countries have a free access for citizens of other regions of the world to come in freely. Another type of public policy, for example, when a country which originally was considered an originating country, but later they acquire policies where they dollarize their currency, then they transform from originating countries to destination countries. This leads to migratory flows to these countries, and they become destination countries and transit for other locations. This I'm mentioning so that while we are trying to battle human slave trade, we need to note in our authorities in our nations, the prosecutor's offices, the police, and to make sure that people are aware and begin to take measures to fight against this problem in our region. Nevertheless, the traffickers and slave traders are seeking other blind points or black holes where they can transport their victims to the region. We need to remember that countries such as Guatemala and Belize have a territorial differendum for some time now, so that migratory flows are not as exact as in others. So this leads to, instead of moving their potential victims through southern regions, they're going through this area instead and later to other places and other regions from there. In the Caribbean area, we also note the problem, and this phenomenon is clear. This crime is apparent. The countries that have higher income levels, they are the destination countries, or many times the transit points. The migratory flows often move from countries that have a cultural or linguistic affinity, such as to European countries. But data on this mobilization has been identified in the Caribbean area. When we talk about slave trade in the Americas, there are factors that promote human trafficking. The fact that a person is poor is not in itself a direct reason for this person to become a victim of human trafficking, but it is a condition that contributes to all of these matters. It promotes this crime, a sexual demand for sex, cultures, traditions that promote human slave trade, domestic violence, unemployment, gender discrimination, a lack of civil registries where there's a lack of opportunities for people to migrate illegally, the impact of national conflicts or regional conflicts, natural disasters, a lack of formal education are all conditions that promote human trafficking within the Americas. There are other factors that do attract possible victims. Basically, we have found the hope for finding employment, the demand for this cheap labor, which is noted in the financially developed countries for both men and women. We note also a demand for exotic women, so to speak, the demand for the sex industry, and the idea of living in a glamorous lifestyle within the financially developed countries. We note that within the OAS, mechanisms have been created that involve assist the countries in combating this crime. I'd like to mention to you the first meeting for national authorities took place on the island of Margarita in Venezuela in 2006, and this year in 2009 it will be in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Basically, what the states are seeking and what they've agreed on is to work in fighting the trafficking of people, create legal frameworks to fight this crime in a holistic manner, help victims, and also gather information, which is so important for public policies, and of course work on prevention and protection of victims. It's very important to note and acknowledge that international organizations, government, civil society must work together in order to battle this crime, to fight this crime, because all institutions and organizations and governments are carrying out their policies separately, and we must, because of the lack of resources to fight this crime, that there be a unity among these institutions on all sectors. The OAS works with IOM and the UNODC, UNICEF, the ILO, Save the Children Sweden with the program for disappeared people, and of course with civil society and government agencies. The activities of the organization involve research, training, and capacity building of government personnel, involving organizations that work in favor of women, information campaigns, establishing legal frameworks that are so necessary in combating human trafficking. Peacekeeping capacity, just to show you a couple of our activities, we've been involved in peacekeeping capacity building. Around 41% of blue hats of the UN come from the Latin American region, and we must instruct them with regard to prevention and identifying victims of human trafficking and the slave trade. A program that has been highly accepted by the states is consular training, because many times the possible victims of slave trade have access first to consular and diplomatic officials, and if these people are not aware or are not able to recognize a person who has been victimized in this way, the mechanisms are different. It's not the same as deporting someone or repatriating someone who has been a victim of slave trade or human trafficking. With regard to international legal framework, and the time is up, in the Americas, most of the countries in the continent, of the 35 states that make up the OAS, very few of them have not signed or ratified the Protocol of Palermo. And on a national level, we note that little by little, the member states, 10 years ago, they were not immersed in modifying their penal codes or creating legal frameworks which would include human trafficking and the slave trade. But now, more or less, most of the countries have in some way described this as a crime, defined it clearly, and are producing legal frameworks within which they're including subjects of prevention, processing criminals, and above all, protecting and assisting victims. This is just to give you an idea of what we see in North, Central, and South America, the countries that have frameworks, not all of them legal frameworks that are integrating all these crimes, but they have at least defined the crime, and these are more countries. And I'm up, my time is up, but hopefully this has just been an overview to respond to later your questions in the time allowed later. Thank you so much.
Many thanks, Fernando. We're going to move straight on to the next presenter, Juan Carlos Vasquez, from the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna, the CITES. If I can call you out, you can present from there.
Perfect.
Okay.
Gracias. Muchas gracias por la invitación.
Thank you for the invitation. Thanks to CSIS. This gives me an opportunity to connect the three areas of information. We are, for the first time, connecting these topics, and there are several issues that are being addressed. I was very interested on the presentation on traffic of drugs and human trafficking and the connection with the cartels, and I'm particularly interested because that's where I come from, and we can see the connections of the drug and human trafficking in the region. Now, when it comes to wildlife, that includes fishing resources and timber, that is somewhat a forgotten issue in this context, and to give you an idea how relevant this is, on the first page of the Washington Post, there's a story on toilet paper. This is not a national security issue, but this comes from trees that are older than 100 years, and it allows paper to be as soft as we want it to be. So there's a debate on the paper about the use of recycling and recycling paper. This underlies the and underscores the importance of our discussion. I'd like to touch upon what Adrian said. The CITES Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna, I have stated the numbers. The endangered species are 800. Within those, we have tigers, jaguars, sea turtles, whales, the large apes, the species that we all know. And then there are about 33,000 species that are listed on Appendix 2 and 3. We have a system of lists where the species are being classified. Central American countries are rich in biodiversity. And include many of the species listed on the convention. This is one of the first environmental agreements after the Stockholm Conference that was the first modern conference that linked these topics. It includes all the countries that produce and consume wildlife. Angola, Iraq are missing, North Korea also, but basically it includes all the countries that produce and use wildlife. Now, turning to human and wildlife trafficking, there are agreements that are more of an advocacy nature, and other agreements make decisions and implement them. CITES belongs to the category of implementation. In March of 2010 in Doha, there will be a discussion on the transfer of species from one appendix to the other. There's a debate about including bluefin tuna in the listings of the list of the convention, and ivory, caviar, fur trade is also being discussed. Now, 90 days after this is decided at the conference, a new legal regime will be enforced for those species. I will not take too much time on this, but there are basically four blocks of activities. First one is governance. It's a practical analysis. Our problem is not the trickling down of the decisions, but more the fact that the technicians at the base are making decisions, and it's hard to make sure that they are enforced at a higher level. And we discuss incentives, the participation of all actors. So the scientific approach is and science-based evidence that affects biodiversity. So the participants in our meetings are mostly have mostly a technical background, and we are interested and focused on the monitoring and enforcement. That reflects our work with several institutions. We share intelligence with the International Customs Union. We were working recently with the UN office for the fight against drugs and crimes, and there are working groups that underscore the urgency of some issues. We have a specialized task force on rhinoceros as an example. We also have a memorandum of understanding with Interpol. John Seller, a colleague of mine, a Scott police officer, was expected to meet with us. He's now in Manaus doing work on wildlife for Interpol, and we work with the customs, international customs, also with police, customs, judges, and other agencies, the general attorney. We are also working with governments and the civil society. They play an important role to train those at the border sites and customs, those who are more in contact with the human trafficking can help us to report if there is jaguars or skins going through or fishing resources or timber. In Peru, at the port Santo Tomás de Castilla at Petén, timber is being traded, and cedar and mahogany are some of the major woods that are coming to the United States, and such is the case of mahogany that comes from Central America and South America. We also work with two basic standards. One is the scientific ruling that the trade is not threatening to biodiversity, and also a legal ruling. We grant visas to monitor the movement of resources that come to us in the shape of toilet paper and other shoes and other products. Now, when it comes to wildlife, there is an illegal trafficking, and the estimates are about $20 billion. And the fact is that if there is no agreement on the figures for drug trafficking, it is even more difficult for us to have an estimate. So it is estimated that a fourth of that trade is illegal, $5 billion, with slight variations depending on what part of the world it's coming from. There is a history of depredation of resources since the conquest. I don't want to say something that may be too polemic. Or controversial. And there is a book that came out that talks about this story of depredation back in the 40s and 50s. Now, in the 70s and 80s, there was repression, and we don't want to dwell too much on the prohibition, but now there is an emphasis on sustainable use of biodiversity, and that is the challenge that we have before us. And also the fight against the illegal trafficking or overuse of resources. So states have sometimes little ability to regulate and control the traffic of wildlife. There is a great large international demand, high profit, low risk of detection, because the there is a degree of impunity. The sanctions for the environmental crimes are very low in the region. Now, some of the challenges we have when we work with organized crime, and someone was asking that question, I'd like to touch upon the interaction between the organized crime. If organized crime focuses on profits, if biodiversity adds profits to their activities, they will add it. And if there is traffic from Petén to the Mayan-Mexican forest, then we have a jurisdictional conflict and the decisions to be made are slow. The traffickers know the vulnerabilities. They have an efficient analysis and they're very competitive. They're informed about the latest technologies. They use up-to-date equipment. However, the states are slow in learning, so organized crime adapts quickly when the state comes up with profiles of their activities and routes. The criminals change their strategies quickly. The states are somewhat rigid to make decisions. They have no resources. The region is very legalistic. We have too many treaties and agreements. Organized crime operates with simple, basic rules. They're easy to implement. Our procedures are complicated to implement our regional strategies. Organized crime has a corrupting influence. It is it destroys our institutions. They get into the Senate, the every government office, and it corrodes the ability of the state to operate under the state of law. Now, overnight, they get into the institutions at their base. Some states are a little more tolerant. They're not for heavy repression. And they get a hold of the government agencies. Those who traffic drugs are not only committing a crime of drug trafficking, but also environmental crimes. They build clandestine strips. They traffic with heavy armaments. They use gangs. There is violence, killings. And I always tell a story at our workshops that in the Amazon, timber trafficking is more a threat than drug trafficking. When someone is detained, they make that statement, please don't get me wrong, I'm a drug trafficker, I don't deal with timber. There are also other associated crimes, money laundering, etc. You have seen the related environmental crimes, the links between drug trafficking and wildlife. You can see here in some pictures that have been taken by the Fish and Wildlife Service. Cocaine is hidden in 220 specimens of constrictor boa. Many people have pets, boas as pets in their homes. Inside those, the boas, there were hidden 39 kilograms of cocaine. That's how they camouflage their shipments. We need resources to fight against it, and at the Attorney General's office, and I haven't used a specific example of a region, but in the Amazon, they use these programs. This is what we have in the jungle right now. They build indigenous villages, they build camps, they clandestine routes, they find ways to take the timber out of the area with pulleys, they build roads, they waste a lot of wood. When the indigenous people see that, they cry because they are wasting a lot of resources. These are pieces of mahogany and that are coming out of the forest in Latin America. To fight this, we need cooperation and efforts. With other institutions, we're working with Interpol, the customs, international customs, and I am thankful to an event like this that can start a dialogue to discuss what we can do together to solve these crimes that are interconnected. Thank you.
La siguiente presentación, exposición de José Manuel Martínez Morales, de las Naciones Unidas, la oficina sobre...
To continue with the next one, José Manuel Martínez Morales, the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, la oficina de la ONU, referente a droga y delincuencia.
Tal y como habíamos acordado los integrantes de la mesa, me voy a dirigir a ustedes en español, y sin embargo la presentación se preparó en su momento en inglés.
Presentation was presented in English. Thank you for the invitation to participate here. We believe this to be very important. And in fact, the title already suggests a series of concerns, trafficking in the Mesoamerican corridor and the threat for regional security and human safety and security. This is a very important subject, and I believe that it is very much up to date. In our office, the UN Office Against Drugs and Crime, Mr. Mario Acosta is waiting for the results of these activities here. We have a series of offices throughout the world. I am very pleased to be working in Panama, and I'm responsible for the office in Panama, Central America, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic, and to carry out the programs in that part of the world. In the first panel, much was said, and with a lot of detail regarding the threats that we face for Central America and Mexico, And of course, drug trafficking was mentioned. I believe that the situation concretely with drug trafficking for Central America, for Mesoamerica, is particularly of particular concern and has some perverse effects in rule of law, governance, and other matters which are being mentioned in this forum. In 2007, our office published, with the assistance of the Inter-American Development Bank, a study which was presented here in Washington in March of 2007 regarding the development of organized crime and development in Central America and how this negatively affects the development of these countries. The subtitle was Trapped in a Crossroads. The producing countries, as you know, in the south, the consumers principally in the north of the continent and in Europe and Central America is trapped in this transit area. Unfortunately, these countries as well become consumer countries. Daily we see payment in kind for the efforts made by the natives of the area, by the drug traffickers. We have noticed that this provokes an increase in consumerism of these drugs. Also, the pressure made towards the north, the U.S. and Mexico, regarding organized crime against large drug trafficking groups, narcotics as well as amphetamines, causes them to move to other areas of the continent and towards the south as well. Also, the case which has been noted, which I believe is very important, and that is the relationship between gangs, street violence, organized crime, and groups of drug traffickers. All of this is generating a situation of insecurity in the continent and among the people in our countries, which, as was noted in the study that you can find, of course, on our website, www.undc.org, there are figures regarding the cost that all of this represents in the percentage of the GDP, and also it has a negative effect on national investment and foreign investment in the Central American countries, and it has negative effects on tourism, which is one of the main attractions. It's a key source of resources on the midterm. And also it affects an increase in corruption and the sense of being unsafe. And it's a great concern is that it increases the percentage of citizens who would accept authoritarian solutions instead of a democratic government to have or rule of law, because they're facing this subject of lack of security. Also, great detail was given to the discussion of arms trafficking, and it's interesting to note how these threats of the cartels are providing more and more powerful military-type weapons. It's no longer a .38 revolver, now it's .50 caliber weapons that can even battle against helicopters. Money laundering was mentioned, and how this is negatively influencing the development of the countries and distorting as well the financial figures, macroeconomics, and how this influences corruption in a negative way. What is also very important and concerning is how organized crime is threatening and attempting more and more to control the state and its institutions. It's a serious threat for the rule of law and also democracy in our nations. As we were mentioning, the subject of weapons, which come from the U.S., we were already provided with many figures on this, and also a concern for the region is kidnapping. In fact, the cartels, organized crime, are utilizing this. They're diversifying their work more and more, and unfortunately kidnapping has become a part of the activities carried out by cartels and organized crime. Now, looking to what the regional instruments might be, which are being prepared on an international level, please allow me to refer to the principles that guide the international approach of our office. In order to confront all of these huge problems that we have seen previously, we have seen the need to adopt a regional approach which is integrated to handle organized crime and drug trafficking. For years now, it's been acknowledged by the Central American, the CCP. They had a regional action plan for years now and is hoping to aim towards 2013, and we'd like to generate a new generation of programs that will focus on the threats and the problems and the needs of the region on a national and regional level. To achieve all of this, our office will focus on developing programs, diversification of these programs, and also integration of regional programs and national programs. The first goal is to establish missions for carrying out assessment and programming in several countries in the region to identify what the requirements are for technical assistance. As far as diversification of programs, in previous years, I'd like to mention that there was technical assistance which was provided by the office, and it was limited to drugs in every way. Production, treatment, insertion, legal support, and structures of the state to help them to apply the law. But now we'd like to supplement this and focus on everything having to do with transnational organized crime, corruption, and the subjects that we have mentioned previously. With regard to integration of regional programs and national programs, we would like to focus on cross-cutting subjects, bringing in experts on all the subjects mentioned. The structure of our regional programming is based on rule of law and human safety and security. And to work on this, we are foreseeing work on three sub-programs. The first would be illicit trafficking, organized crime and terrorism. Second, the fight against corruption and promoting justice and integrity. And the third is to improve human development and health. These three pillars referred to here are included in the program, which was presented by UNODC in Managua in the ministerial meeting and was accepted by the SICA member states in Mexico. Every one of these pillars and its components have had identified priority programs for the purpose of a mission that was carried out and identified by us and SICA, a mission to Central America that took place in July and the beginning of August. The components of this program in the first phase, which we hope to implement in March of 2011, with a second one that would go to December of 2012, is based on a series of priorities indicated by the Central American institutions that reflect the perception that within the region there are tremendous threats to governance and development. Well, I need to move on to summarize now because it's been very intense. What we're attempting to do with the combination of experts and countries in Central America is to increase the professional capacity of the enforcement agencies for different areas, improve the acquisition of information and intelligence support that will later allow to provide operatives in response to this, and specialization on specific cases of organized crime, and promote integrity and avoid corruption, and support among agencies of law enforcement, and reinforce and improve cooperation among law enforcement agencies in each one of the countries, and also on a regional level. Support justice reforms and criminal law within the framework of the rule of law. It's a process based on results, and for all of this, we have worked with a group of experts in the System for Central American Integration in San Jose, Costa Rica. Since just recently, we gathered a group of experts in to prepare ways in which we could collaborate. The idea was that we need to have a regional approach to fight against drug trafficking and organized crime. There was also a need to work parallelly with the Caribbean, and a regional program was set up for the Caribbean as well, and we'll have a ministerial conference in February in Santo Domingo with the CARICOM, Dominican Republic, and Cuba to talk about our results. A policy was adopted, a regional plan, and it's called the Pact of the Santo Domingo. SICA, General Secretariat, we organized in Nicaragua a ministerial meeting in Managua. For this year, there were four results which came of this ministerial. On one hand, we established or accepted fully the establishment of a regional program office in Panama, and also the decision to establish regional excellence centers in Central American countries, and the presentation of all the countries of their integrated program, which complements the regional strategy, and also the presentation of the Santo Domingo Pact and the Managua mechanism. There was one adopted for Central America, but then they added on the other region. Three key functions are involved, and the first is to implement the regional program with the member states and key players in the struggle against drug trafficking, organized crime, and to strengthen the rule of law. Secondly, to coordinate centers for excellence that were represented in the ministerial conference in Managua, in Panama, on maritime safety, gang issues in El Salvador and Guatemala. They're progressing with the government to work against organized crime, everything having to do with this Convention of Palermo, and community participation in Nicaragua and others in the Dominican Republic. The regional office will coordinate activities with regard to the Santo Domingo Pact and others. They will present at the end of October in New York the results so far. The following slide can be passed over. Running along here, we can move on to this. What was done with Costa Rica, as was mentioned earlier, is the result of a dynamic process of planning. We started from the point of where do we want to go, and then the regional program, which later came out of this in the conference in Managua, develops what the action plan would be, which was approved by the presidents, which develops a national regional strategy for Central America, which was approved at its point in time at a higher level. As I mentioned, the results of the ministerial conference in Managua are the centers of excellence, the establishment of the regional office, and also note was taken of the regional program with SICA, and the programs that are in each of the countries and were presented by those countries that were represented. The political was signed by all the member countries of SICA, and Costa Rica was an observer, but all the rest of the countries as members were signed at a given moment. I'd like to emphasize the subject of the centers of excellence, the mandate that they have. The idea is to work in each one of the countries of the Central American region to take advantage, on one hand, of the experience that they have in these countries with regard to the subjects that I mentioned earlier, Panama, because containers, legal and illegal freight, and the traffic of species, precious woods, and arms trafficking, of course. They'll take advantage of the experience in Panama to favor what already exists, and then, of course, to disseminate this to all the other countries. The idea is to from and for and to Central America. The goal is initially we were going to bring in experts, but then for a certain number of years, but then everything would remain in the countries and to benefit these countries, looking to sustainability and the policies of the states. The goal is to train, obviously, technicians in the different countries and have an active exchange among the experts so that they can participate in computer-based training and conferences, technologies, and whatnot, and favor what will be an exchange of information and cooperation among the countries. Thank you very much for your attention, and excuse me for having taken up more time than was allowed me. Thank you very much.
Let's now turn to the last presentation by Luis Guillermo Medina Alfaro. Let's wait for the presentation to get loaded. Thanks to the Interpol office for the invitation. I'm representing the regional office of Interpol in San Salvador, and I will touch upon briefly about the activities of Interpol and then human trafficking. Interpol has 187 member countries, and there is a central national office in each of those countries. It deals with communication, with the immigration, custom, port administration, and police offices in those countries. And we build a network of an international nature. And domestically, we have a regional, actually, office that works with other countries. The office that I come from is the office of San Salvador. We take in all the cases that relate to Central America and Mexico. Our scope of action includes requests from the police of Central America and the Caribbean, and Interpol requests from Lyon, France. We work on projects, operations and activities among the main roles that Interpol has is to offer world services of communication, protected police database and information services for police purposes, operational police and training for the police forces. There is a network within each of the offices in the 187 countries that allows for real-time exchange of information in between countries. For public security and terrorism, human trafficking, drugs, organized crime, financial crimes of high technology are some of our areas, and we support all this research related to these crimes. The goal number 5 of Interpol is a 2-year period, 2008 to 2010. It includes the provision of specialized scientific knowledge, coordination and support, in this case for human trafficking and child trafficking. What we do with the information is to compile them, and special instructors teach this at the regional level. There are 4 projects right now. One is for car stealing, then the gang project for Central America that has spilled to other countries, not only the U.S., but also Spain. And we have seen people that have relocated to Italy. Gangs is a problem that spills to drug trafficking and human trafficking as well. Human trafficking includes crimes against children, women trafficking for sexual exploitation, for forced labor, and organ trafficking. One of the actions by Interpol to fight these types of crimes is to hold an annual meeting of the working force at the General Secretariat, and there is a working group at the region to exchange information. The meeting will be held actually in 2 weeks. We are trying to convene it as soon as possible. Interpol events have been restricted due to the influenza incidents. We're trying to keep meetings to a minimum and to avoid travel. Interpol also publishes a manual for investigators for human trafficking. There is also the project Red Roots. We identify pathways for human trafficking. We see here the trends and movements of people crossing through Middle America. There is a corridor from Colombia to Costa Rica, Costa Rica to Mexico, and there are areas where they have bases for the human trafficking. There is displacement from Russia to Europe, Asia to Europe, Australia to Africa. This is a very difficult issue because there is a complex network for human trafficking and organized crime, not only deals with drugs, but the third most profitable crime is human trafficking, and it is relatively easy to do. There is sexual exploitation of people, and it affects a large number of people. You see the paths.
Muy complicada. Viene gente de Asia hacia Europa.
People from Asia and Europe come to North America, and from South America to Africa and other countries. Interpol publishes a good practice manual, good practices for investigators of human trafficking. Many who work at the government in several countries do not know what Interpol is, and there are manuals that are not being taken advantage of by those at the government. Interpol is there for identifying routes. Within the Manual for Good Practices, we identify the victims of human trafficking, international cooperation. We do not place emphasis only on those who are profiting from the human trafficking, but also on raising awareness that sometimes people can may unwillingly cooperate and or unknowingly, and they may not realize that by bringing someone to work as a domestic help in their homes, they can be contributing to this problem. The authorities may sometimes only focus on punishing the action, but there is no effort placed on prevention. We try to have more outreach efforts and a call to the population to emphasize prevention. I'll try to speed it up. The Red Root Project deals with women trafficking from Eastern Europe. Scope, victims, origin, destination, transportation, ways of operation, recruitment efforts. Some of the projects in Central America are there's DCN trying to disarm the networks and human trafficking that was presented to the chiefs of police, and we will be holding a meeting to have joint operations to act together and give support to the Central American region. The scope of application of this plan is in Central America, Mexico, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic. Some of the factors that have worsened human trafficking is low economic and social development, lack of jobs, the proliferation of gangs that control the human trafficking in the region, corruption of the authorities, gangs may have control on human and drug trafficking, and this is a problem that extends beyond the Central American corridor, but is becoming worse. We are also working on prevention of the population at large and children. There are internet efforts or schemes to obtain images or people to exploit them sexually. One of the responses by Interpol is the use of a technology that is called MindFind. It has allowed us to have access to stolen databases that are being used to deploy people. Organized crime is no longer using forged IDs because the current technology is able to detect those very easily at the checkpoints. But they cannot verify where the person that actually is holding the passport is the person that whose identity is stated. So the MindFind technology is a database that is being used at the border checkpoints. We're working with customs, immigration, and we are giving them support to have security at the border in order to verify whether the person that is holding a passport and using it for travel is the person that is claimed on the passport. This is very simple. The passport is checked at the immigration point. The information is checked by Interpol and by immigration to see if the passport has been stolen. If it is stolen, an alert is given that tells the country that has reported the document as stolen, and the person that is traveling with that passport is investigated to determine whether they are traveling because perhaps they're trafficking another person. This is an example of the alert. The signal being given could be positive or negative. If it's negative, the person continues on. If it is a positive alert, then messages are being sent to the countries identified. Interpol also does training on human trafficking. We hold fora, and we invite experts to teach about this issue. We hold meetings with international organizations to seek solutions to this problem. The International Organization for Immigration is part of this meeting. Interpol also provides support 24/7 to the 187 member countries. And thank you for your attention, and this is all. Thank you for all the presentations.
Questions and comments. There's already a hand raised over here. If I could ask you to use the microphone and to identify yourself. Give us any interesting details about who you might be.
Thanks very much. Peter DeShazel from CSIS. I have a question for whichever of the panelists or whomever would like to address it. The issue of arms trafficking. We've talked about trafficking from the United States into Mexico. Is that the principal arms trafficking route in the region? Are there others, and do we have any sense of the actual size of the flow of arms trafficking in the region? Thank you.
Bueno.
The problem in Mexico with human and armed trafficking is large. There are large settlements that have been identified in human trafficking. These are areas of sexual tourism that the local authorities may turn a blind eye to. And in the case of armed trafficking, many times organized crime has obtained them or has secured them. It is difficult to establish how they have been procured. There is a law in Mexico that prohibits the sale of weapons to anybody, so this is very complex to explain.
Buenos días y muchas gracias.
Good morning and thank you very much. I'm Alejandro Boiche, the Wildlife Protection. I have a couple of questions. One of them is if you have identified that arms traffic, people, and wildlife are the same, if they use the same routes for trade and the region, and also do you believe that the wall that is being built between the U.S. and Mexico has reduced the traffic of people, weapons, and wildlife? Thank you. I'll try to respond to your question. Obviously, the routes, the organizations many times are the same, actually. They traffic in everything. As mentioned, everything that generates financial resources will be a focus of attention for organized crime. With regard to the routes, they don't necessarily have to be the same. As was mentioned before, for drug trafficking, as was mentioned in the first panel, the Pacific route is taking on much more importance than the Caribbean route. The percentages vary according to the sources. 70% to 80% would say it would go through the Pacific Ocean, and the more utilized one previously was the Caribbean. And they report differences in this. Obviously, the trafficking of humans, migrants, is by land. Sometimes they arrive by airplanes from Africa, for example, to the U.S., but usually with regard to South America, and then they come up by roads or boats to Central America, and from there they usually go by land. So that's what I can tell you on that point. I hope I've responded to your question.
The middle in the center. Yes, please.
Good morning and thank you. My name is Javier Melendez from the Institute of Strategic Studies of Nicaragua, Interpol. There's a red report on the route of human trafficking in Central America and arms and the modality of how they operate. They're the same. And I insist on this question that she asked. Is there evidence that those who traffic drugs are also trafficking weapons and people, or are they different groups for each? Well, what has been observed in Central America is that the gangs are the ones that have control over the Central American area. And the drug trafficking, which is being done from South America to Mexico, has to pass through Central America. And Central America, as I mentioned, there's a very strong influence on the part of the gangs. They have control over the situation, and if they are not in touch with the gangs, if the cartels aren't in touch with the gangs, then happens what many countries like Panama is, they take the drugs away from them and they're not allowed to go on forth. They control the weapons, traffic, human and drugs. Yes, they're trying to do a complete study on this, because in reality their investigations carried out kind of by chance, and there's an attempt to work carefully to have a diagnosis of what's going on in Central America in this regard.
Wow, we have time. Why don't we take three questions together, and then we'll wrap everything up, because we do have a break. So there's one here, one there, and then David at the back. Yes, please.
I'm Mary DeLore with Catholic Relief Services, and my question is primarily for Fernando Garcia Robles. In the first panel, it was mentioned the concern about the lack of comparative lack of focus on trafficking for the purposes of forced labor in the region. Could you speak a little bit more in terms of what is being done to increase attention to this element of it, both in terms of research commitment and the part of bilateral or multilateral organizations to increase attention by the governments to respond to that aspect of trafficking?
Thank you. And a question right here at this table. Yes. Yes.
Adriana Beltran from the office here in Washington for Latin American Center. I would like to have you clarify a little bit about the subject of the gangs and drug trafficking, because in the previous presentation, Raul Benitez mentioned that the reality of the gangs was were controlling on a lower level, and in Guatemala, the cartels that have many more years of existence, and they control the drug trafficking more. So I'd like to ask you to clarify more about what exactly is the role of the gangs with regard to drug trafficking. And I'm not sure if any others of you might have some comments in this regard.
At the back.
David Shirk, University of San Diego. I want to echo the first question that was asked here about labor trafficking, and in particular, what is being done to try to monitor cases of abuse and exploitation of workers who are deported from the United States to Latin America? What provisions exist in Latin American countries, particularly in Central America, to try to track that, to capture the data of the kinds of exploitation that's occurring for that marginalized population? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Panel, who would like to contend? Why don't you begin, Fernando? Yes?
Well, thank you very much for your question. As far as the Organization of American States, in addition to raising awareness about sexual exploitation of women, children, men, we're not only addressing that particular issue, but we're also addressing forced labor. We understand that this is not a type of exploitation that has been addressed at different political levels. So as part of the different trainings that we are conducting throughout the member states, the OAS member states, that's one of the key emphases that we're trying to provide, to let governments know that in addition to sexual exploitation, there are other forms of exploitations, but we do not necessarily stay there. We, in addition to providing that information and the need for governments to pay attention to labor exploitation, we also try to mention that there are other forms of exploitation, and the illicit trafficking of organs, the illegal adoptions of forced marriages. So we need to work more. There's some awareness being taking place, and my understanding is that little by little, member states are including in their legal frameworks, not only sexual exploitation, but other forms of exploitation. So they're coming up with national frameworks to combat trafficking in a very comprehensive way, addressing prevention, prosecution, and protection of victims, not necessarily on just for sexual exploitation, but also for other forms of exploitation, labor being one of those forms of exploitation. And that's my answer.
And regarding the gangs? Well, I'd like to mention, regarding the problem of the gangs, in reality, from the beginning, I'd like to speak a little bit about the beginnings. The gangs began in California, here in the United States. People who were from El Salvador committed crimes, were deported, and they arrive in El Salvador, which is the foundation or the base for the gangs, and they become professionalized in the jails, and they come out because they don't have to serve long sentences because their crimes may be just for robbery or something. They come out of the gangs and, excuse me, the jails, and then we have the gangs that are dominating the region, and that's the 18 and MS-13. These gangs have been in contact with the Mexican cartels already in order to be involved in drug trafficking. Why is this? It's been difficult for the Mexican cartels to do the transshipments from South America, Colombia in this case, where the drugs usually come from. It's been difficult for them to bring the drugs by air, and so they've taken alternate routes, which are land routes and maritime routes, such as speedboats, and utilizing as well the land routes, and the gangs help them along those lines on the road. And we have this relationship that the gangs have. They do control organized crime in the Central American corridor. There are countries that do not have the figures on this, or they haven't realized that they have gangs in their countries. One of them has the problem, and I've noted in meetings that we've had on a regional level, that Costa Rica sometimes doesn't know that this problem exists in their country, and they tell us that there are around 40 gang members, when in El Salvador we have registered or noted not only 15,600 gang members. For such a small region in El Salvador, which is only 6 million inhabitants, they have a huge control over the Central American corridor, and this affects Honduras, Guatemala, and that's why I say that they are in control already of organized crime along this corridor. In order to reach North America, the cartels need to be in touch with them and work with them in order to pass through Central America.
I believe we're going to take a 10-minute break, and thank you very much for your attention.